often see fear as a bad thing. I see fear as a good thing. And that reframe is important because if I'm not a little bit nervous, a little bit fearful when I'm doing something, for example, a presentation or running a session, it actually means I don't care. The nerves, that little bit of fear is actually, this matters to me. And so rather than see it as a bad thing, see it as a good thing.
Michelle, welcome to the Career Confidence Podcast today. We've been trying to do this for a little while now, so I'm really excited to have this conversation with you today. For those in the audience that don't follow your amazing LinkedIn profile or know who you are, give us a little bit of a sense into who is Michelle, your background, and your career journey. So Michelle, over to you.
So I would say that my career journey has been defined by a love of adventure. Very early on, I looked at my, choices and realized that what I wanted was to have lots of choice, to not feel hemmed in, but also to never look back and regret that I hadn't done something. And so much of what I've done has been based on not really knowing exactly how it would pan out or whether it would pan out, but this sense that if I put in the right type of effort and worked hard, that I'd come out the other end okay. And even if it didn't quite work out, I still would have learned something through the process. And so I've had a really unusual career. I've done everything from work in politics. I worked in the mining sector. I worked in financial services. And through that corporate lens, I did everything from company spokesperson to running change programs to being a head of compliance. And then I woke up one day and realized that I loved learning, I loved being challenged, but I was no longer sort of driven by this sense of need of security. I really needed autonomy. And that led me to working for myself. And what's really interesting, if someone had said to me about a year before that, oh, Michelle, you'll go and work for yourself, I would have gone, oh no, I'm a career girl, like, you know, corporate chick. I won't be running a business. And, you know, I look back and go, 11 years later, it was a really good decision.
Wow. And we're going to go into all of this because the first thing I will just say is this, though, which is so empowering from your story, is that the idea of regret scared you more than actually taking the messy action in the first step. And that's definitely been a driving force throughout my career and life as well, Michelle. Like, I'm petrified of getting to the end of my hopefully long, glorious life and looking back and going, what if? And talk me through that sort of framework, like, because taking a leap from that secure corporate job into starting your own thing is a big move. And a lot of people maybe would want to do that or pivot out into something new or do something that maybe is scaring them a little bit. What did that look like in theory? Like, what was your sort of thought process at that time? Talk us through that.
I'm not sure whether it was so much me really working through the fear. It was more my last corporate gig had not been fun. And I still remember the exact moment it all happened. You know, I'd worked out how to exit from this organization where it just, you know, we did not gel together as entities. And I decided to go on a meditation retreat. And, you know, it was a big gig. It was a big, Craig and I, my husband, we had moved to Sydney. So we had relocated states for this job. And 10 months in, you know, I'm done. And, you know, there's a whole lot of fears associated with that wrapping up and what it would mean for my reputation and brand. But putting all that aside, when I was on the meditation retreat, you know, I had this epiphany and I realized that I needed to go and work for myself, because people that I'd been talking to about, you know, other corporate roles, rather than getting that sort of nervous excitement that you can get when an opportunity arises, I felt nauseous. I felt this sense of dread, and that made me realize that something needed to shift. And so I came home from the meditation retreat and I said to Craig, I'm done. And he goes, done with what? I said, done with corporate. And he goes, oh, great. What are you going to do? I said, I'm going to open a business. And he goes, in what? And I said, I've got no idea. And he goes, excellent. So I was very lucky that I had a cheer squad, even though I seriously had no idea what I was going to do. And I mean, I can sort of joke about it a little bit flippantly. You know, I knew that I wanted to work for myself. My sort of the sticking point was because I'd had a very broad corporate career, I didn't really know in what. And I got some really good advice early on from actually my financial planner, who said to me, Michelle, you've never run a business. So in your first 12 months, you know, don't set it up as a company, run it as a sole trader, because then you can make decisions and exit more quickly if you want to and things like that. But he also said, just say yes. He goes, you don't know what you're going to like because you've never done it. And it turned out to be really, really good advice, because in that first year, I started to figure out where my space was. And even if you know, if someone was to map my 11 years of running a business, I have shifted, not dramatically, but I've shifted the positioning. I've shifted the type of work that I do and the areas that are my sort of sweet spot. And that's because you're figuring stuff out as you go along. And, you know, I often say to people, when they're thinking about those career choices, you need to know your guardrails. And by that, I mean, I had certain guardrails, you know, okay, I was doing this when I was in my mid 40s. So I had some, you know, financial backing already. It's not as though I was throwing everything out and not having some security net underneath me. And I gave myself a timeline. I said, you know, you have a year. If in a year, you can't earn enough money commensurate with the level of effort, but also with the level of effort and enjoyment, than go back to corporate. So I was giving myself, you know, measurements and milestones that I needed to track myself to go, is this the right thing for me? And I worked really hard, you know, and you would know this, you're running a business. I still remember one Sunday, Craig coming in, I was doing some work in the study and he came in and he said to me, so when are you going to be done? And I said, oh, wow, that's a really big question. And he goes, well, actually, I wasn't really looking for a philosophical conversation about what done means, Michelle. I was really meaning you're going to be done in 20 minutes. It's an hour, 2 hours. When do I see you this afternoon? So I think you've got to really be clear about what drives you. And so, you know, those motivational levers and career drivers are really important. And then the guardrails. What are those guardrails that you have around you that you can then within those parameters make a really wise choice around what is going to work for you and also what's going to work for the people around you. And so even when, you know, I make the comment about coming back after the meditation retreat and saying, okay, I'm done, that would have been a very different conversation if we'd had, you know, kids at high school and still, you know, there's a lot of sort of different sort of life dynamics. And I often say to people, you cannot divorce your career from your life. The two work hand in hand. So a decision you make in your career impacts life choices and vice versa.
Yeah, that's so powerful. There's so much self-awareness in that as well, because I think we all have these different seasons and chapters of life, and it's honoring those seasons and chapters. And you had a very successful corporate career that I'm sure gave you a lot of transferable skills, which then enabled you to start this business, which I'd love to dig into next. But the key thing that you did say, which is a really, I'm listening for patterns always, Michelle. I'm listening for words that people say, because I really want to pinpoint what makes people successful. Like, why do some people get ahead in their lives and career? Why do other people stay stuck? And you mentioned your intuition. You went away and you got out of your sort of usual day-to-day life. You went and did a meditation retreat and you really, I imagine, got centered away from all the noise, and these intuition and these thoughts came to you. And then you were very brave and took the risk and went for it, which is incredible. A lot of people don't. But that intuition, that feeling that we just try and push aside, I think gets louder and louder and louder. And then our lives start to become chaotic. We start maybe getting mental health problems and we feel so out of alignment. We don't feel like ourselves if we keep ignoring these little niggles. And I think they whisper to start with and then they start shouting and then we can't ignore them. We get, you know, the stress, the diagnosis, all these things can happen. And it all just starts with just actually tuning in and going, what is really important to me right now? Not what society thinks or my spouse thinks or whatever, but what matters to me? So I'd love to know, like, that intuition, have you always had that, or was that something that you've built over time? And how can people really tap into that? Because I think that's so powerful.
Thank you for bringing that up, and also for talking about this, because it's such an important topic. You know, I often say to people, there's a whole lot of things in life that we're told that we should do. And yet when we build our career and our life on the should rather than the could. And so, you know, I look at my life and I was the youngest of four and I grew up in a very bright family. I was not the brightest one. I was the one that, you know, when I say struggle, you know, my husband always likes to go, Michelle, I can't imagine you struggling. But I did. I had to work really hard. In comparison to my siblings, they were naturally gifted. Everything came harder to me. And so I used to have this little mantra in my head, I'm not the smartest kid in the class, but I'm the hardest working. And that ability to work hard is what has always set me apart. But then I did a lot of work in my 20s, really learning to like myself, because that whole comparison thing when I was going through childhood, that was really hard. And part of it was moving away, like moving to a different state, and not moving away from my family. I love my family, but it was me creating my own identity and my own sense of self. So I would say I've done a lot of work on who I am. I know who I am. I know what matters to me, and I know my drivers and my values. And the reason that's really important in that context of intuition is it's hard to listen to what your body is telling you. So I often say to people, when we feel an emotion, our emotion is data. Our brain is telling us something. It's telling us that we're happy or sad or that we're angry or that we're frustrated. And so all of those kind of feelings and sensations in the body, they're stories, they're data. We have to work out what it then means and listen to it. And often you're right. Often people don't listen to it, but they're often not listening to it because of societal pressure, pressure from family or from siblings or partners. And I remember when I left corporate, I had people who said to me, oh my God, I can't believe you're doing this. Like, one, how can you afford to do this? And I had an answer to that, but they just couldn't get it. And it was almost their sense of fear or their sense of obligation or whatever was driving their motivations was then overlaying everything that was coming onto me. And I often say to people, everything in life comes with a trade-off. And so, sure, I could have stayed in corporate and earned lots of money, and there was status with the role and a whole lot of, you know, those extrinsic motivational levers. But it meant intrinsically the things that really mattered to me, I was then going to have to step away from at that point. And I made the decision, no, you know, for the first couple of years of running the business, I took a dramatic pay cut. I think, I remember in that first year, I think I earned something like what I'd earned my first year out of university. I was like, woo. But that was my trade-off. I was willing to make that massive pay cut. And, you know, we tightened expenses and other things to enable that to happen because I knew this is what I needed to do. And I think it was about year two, one of my friends, her husband said to me, you're doing what you were born to do. And it was such a nice comment because for me, it was that thing, I felt like it had really landed, that I was doing what I was meant to be doing, but I couldn't do what I do now successfully unless I'd had that corporate experience and had all of the ups and downs that go with it. So all of that has enabled me to do what I do now and do it well.
So, so powerful and such an important message as well, because I think that so many people just stay stuck because they're not quite sure, how can I use what I've got in that context or that business or go and start my own thing with this? So you worked in corporates, what, 30 years? Like that's a nice amount of time to really sort of, I guess, really understand how corporates work. And I'm sure you sort of navigated your way through and up and zigzagged all over the place. But take us back to that corporate, Michelle, before we sort of dive sort of more into your business and what you do, because I know you help so many leaders and people right now. But what did that chapter of your life in corp, what did you learn about Michelle? What did you, and what skills did you learn during that period that now helps you with your current clients, helps you run your business? Like, what part of that chapter and season of life has now enabled you to be successful as an entrepreneur?
Wow, I almost don't know. I almost don't know where to start. Look, I think what it is that I often say to people, having worked in really big, complex organizations, I understand organizational systems. I understand the complexity of how they work, how to navigate them, how to position yourself. I understand how sort of the power dynamics works in big organizations. And often that's what I'm doing with people, helping them navigate a complex system in, and it's usually because something's not working, and helping them work through how to get to the other end, and in a way that helps them get heard or helps them solve a problem or helps position something that needs to change. And if I hadn't worked in a big organization, I wouldn't have that ability to understand the nuances of how things work. You know, how do you find the back door? Because there's a hierarchy, but decisions aren't always made in a hierarchy. They're made based on relationships and who knows who and who's the decision maker, but who's actually influencing the person who's making the decision. So there's, to me, there's a whole heap of soft skills that I gained through my time in corporate. But I also saw really good leadership and not good leadership. And, you know, everyone is influenced by both those. And then that's helped me write books because you get lots of stories from your time when you work in big corporate environments. But I think what I learned more than anything is back yourself. You never know what you're capable of until you actually do it. When you're thinking about something, the thought process versus the reality is always different. And particularly in complex environments, yes, there's technical skills, but as you move up the organizational food chain, it is way less about your technical skills and far more about your ability to influence, to problem solve, to navigate complex environments and build great relationships. So all those, I hate the term soft skills because it's such a misnomer. It's that all of those, you know, competencies become way more important. And yet, and if you look at the world of AI, as so much of that technical stuff will get done by AI, but what we can't outsource is a human-to-human connection.
We are on the same page with this. I keep preaching this, and it just to sort of really drive this home, because what you're saying is so important. When I'm taking a job description now from a company, they're saying to me, Georgie, I need somebody technically, yes, who's about a 5 out of 10. But when it comes to emotional intelligence, empathy, problem solving, critical thinking, I need someone who's a 9. And you're absolutely spot on, Michelle, because these, what I like to call human skills, are going to be our career superpowers. So I would love to dive in now to what do you personally think, in your opinion, from what you're seeing from good leadership versus bad leadership over the years? Let's start with the bad. Let's just go there first. Like what have you seen that just is bad leadership? Or like you've written a whole book about it called Bad Boss. So I'm sure you've got some thoughts on this, but what is like some of the things that, like, if somebody's listening to this right now and like, okay, I really do want to improve my leadership skills, but like, what are some things that, like, are red flags when it comes to a bad boss? Let's just list a few of those first.
And it's interesting when I talk about bad boss, because there are people who are bad bosses and just genuinely not very nice people all round. Mm. You know, we can do the whole narcissistic personality traits and all of that. But there's also people who aren't good bosses, but they're not bad people. And so I distinguish between the two, because you can be the you know, the stereotypical bad boss who runs around, yells at everybody, is an egotistical maniac and just genuinely makes everybody life hell. That is very different to someone who has low levels of self-awareness, but actually thinks they're doing a good job and is trying to do a good job. And so it's important to distinguish between the two, because how, you know, those characterizations then impact how you, as the person working for them, respond in that environment. And so I often see the biggest gap is self-awareness. And look, it's really hard to self-diagnose your own ineffectiveness. And I still remember, going back to good bosses, my best boss ever, and it would have been early in my leadership days. And I was very fortunate because I got feedback early. And, this lady pulls me aside. I'd just been promoted to a junior management role, and you feel kind of really chuffed with yourself, doing everything that I think a good leader does. I'm delegating, I'm getting things done, I'm setting the direction. And then she pulls me aside and she says, Michelle, I get you're ambitious. I get you want to do a good job. But you need to remember that when you move to your next role, no one's going to remember the work you did. The only thing they are going to remember, and I think she was channeling Maya Angelou as she said this, is how you made them feel. And she said, your job as the leader is to help them to get to places that they couldn't get to, but for the fact that they work for you. And so totally changed my focus because I went from that task focus to the relational focus. And what I found was that the more I focused on the relational element, the more the task just happened. But that relational piece and understanding that one-on-one relationship, because often I think leaders, they lead collectively. Here's my team and I shall lead my team like this, as opposed to knowing each person individually, but also understanding yourself enough to know the impact that you're having on each individual. And, the best thing one a leader can do is do those leadership 360s. And it's sometimes not a fun process to go through, but get open, honest feedback from the people around you and not just your team, but your peers, your boss, your boss's boss, other clients or suppliers that you work with, to get that full perspective. Because how you think people experience you, how they actually experience you, can be two different things.
That's so powerful. I do really feel self-awareness is just, I hate to say it, but so lacking sometimes in certain workplaces. Like, I'm just shocked sometimes with people's ability to actually think, do you not understand how that just could make someone feel? And I think now more than ever, as we're like now working in cross-functional teams, all different ages, all different backgrounds, like we need to become really self-aware and lead with more empathy, because you might think a joke's really funny, but that could land very differently to somebody else. And you could make that person feel really isolated and shameful. It's like we have to build our self-awareness. It's just so, so important. So I'm so glad you just brought that up. So let's talk about some of the skills that you believe are going to be really crucial over the next sort of 5 or 10 years that leaders should be sort of doubling down right now. They can be hard skills like AI related if you want, or they can be human skills. I feel like the human skills are going to be more important at that leadership level. But what's your take on this? What do you think leaders should be sort of really learning and diving into right now?
We can build on the self-awareness piece. To me, that's almost like the foundational piece.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I was reading a piece of research, it's probably about 6 months old now, and they were looking at the people who are going to be most impacted by AI. And, there's lots of different reports that are out there. But what was interesting about this piece of research is what they were doing was comparing, contrasting people who are really good at their job versus people who are kind of okay, sort of average at their job. And what they found was that AI becomes an equalizer. And so the people who are elevated are the people who are currently not great at their job. But for the people who are already really good at their job, they're losing that competitive advantage. And so if you want to continue to grow and be the standout in your field, profession, it's incumbent on you to go, well, what's my next learning edge? What is it that I do that is different? Many years ago, I was reading an article about the future belongs to the polymath. And so the polymath is someone who takes two quite different fields and blends them together. And a great example of that is behavioral economics, where you take psychology, you merge it with economics, you get behavioral economics, which open up this whole new field of understanding about how we as humans are influenced in the choices that we make through an economic lens. And so, if you're sitting in your you know, nice, comfortable professional role. I often say, don't get too comfortable, because when you're comfortable, you've stopped learning. And that means you're one step closer to obsolescence, which is not good. So where's your learning edge? What is it that you're going to do differently? And in your field, look to the left and to the right. Look to those complementary but also different professions and go, how can I learn from what that industry or sector is doing or that profession is doing? How does that help me in my field? Think differently. Because the key thing as leaders is you are making decisions and you want to be able to make wise, powerful choices. You make wise, powerful choices when you have expanded cognitive capacity. You get expanded cognitive capacity when you read broadly, when you're open to different ideas, you're open to being challenged, you're open to feeling uncomfortable about what it is that you are hearing, because you then want to be able to filter, you want to be able to synthesize, you want to be able to look at things through different angles and different perspectives to then go, okay, where do we go now?
I'm smiling here because I'm going to ask you. Now, I always like to think about this from, there's someone listening to this right now and they've been doing the same job for the last 20 years and they are comfortable. And they're maybe a mum, they've got two young children, and they're not at the point in their life, the season of life, where they want to take on too much more capacity. You know, they say, Georgie, I've got these two young children, like I'm at full capacity already. But they also know that AI is coming, there's restructures going on in their organization, they're not stupid, they can look around and see what's going on. What advice would you have for that woman right now who is almost feeling a bit stuck and fearful of like, I'm comfortable, but I know I need to shake things up. But I just don't know where I should begin right now because there's a lot of information out there. I'm hearing that I should be upskilling. I'm hearing I should be learning, but I've got such a small window of time in my already full plate. What advice would you have for her?
I often say to people, it's learning in the cracks. So we have cracks in the day. We have 5 minutes here. We have 10 minutes there. What are you going to do? Use that 10 minutes to scroll through Instagram? Or use that time in a way that could be a different type of learning, something that's going to help you with what comes next. I mean, the great thing about AI, I said this to someone the other day, you can't break it. So unlike the internet, when this is going to show my age, I still remember when I first started working, Georgie, and I think you're a bit younger than me, but when I first started working, not everybody had access to the internet. The only person who had access to the internet was the librarian. So you had to go to Alex and say, I need research done. And she said, oh, Michelle, I got this nasty message back from someone telling me that I didn't know how to use the internet and I should go away. So we don't get things like that anymore. And we all have, you know, constant access to technology, but use it wisely because it's a bit like a Kindle or, you know, having books downloaded on your phone. Wherever I am, I have my Kindle with me. And that means, because sometimes, you know, the plane's late or sometimes I'm waiting for a client and they're running late and you're sitting in a coffee shop. And rather than sitting there for 15 minutes not doing anything, I go, great, I've got 10 minutes to actually read something. So it's the choices that you make. And I get that people are really busy, but my challenge back is busy with what as well, because I do see people who go, oh, I'm really busy. And then if I actually get them to map their week, they've spent 20 hours watching Netflix. They've spent, you know, 10 hours on social media. They've spent, you know, a whole raft of stuff that I would go is almost like the junk food diet. It's not adding value to your day. Now, that does not mean you don't have downtime. That does not mean you don't occasionally have a weekend binge watching Netflix. I mean, we all do it. You need to, it's like the peaks or troughs. You know, I look at the last couple of months and it's been incredibly full on for me in terms of the amount and volume of work that I've had on. And we had a busy weekend, but Sunday afternoon, I think from about 3 o'clock till 6:30, I just sat in front of TV and watched episode after episode after episode after episode. It was great. Really needed it. But it's the choice. I'm doing it deliberately, but I also know that that was, you know, setting me up for the week to just have that little bit of downtime. So choices. Be really clear about the choices and how you prioritize your day and what you say yes to and what you say no to. Get really good at saying no and don't feel obligated to do something just because someone else told you that you needed to do it. Look, I must admit, I'm very lucky. I don't suffer FOMO. So I find it funny when people say, oh, I spent 3 hours lining up for a croissant. And I'm like, oh, wow. Life's too short. So don't suffer from FOMO. Apparently there's now JOMO. There's the joy of missing out. So embrace JOMO.
Yeah, I'm just so glad that that was your response, because I'm with you completely, Michelle. I do think that we do need to get very intentional with how we spend our time. And I think it all comes down to our why. Like, why is this important to me? Because I think when you're really anchored in that, you make time for things that are important. I see a lot of women focusing on very urgent tasks, but they're not important tasks. They're not things that are going to move them ahead. They're not things that are going to grow them. They're things that are going to just sort of, like you say, keep them stuck. I actually even deleted Netflix the other day. That's how I've decided that. And look, I still have Apple. So if I want to watch a movie, it's still there. But I'm just finding myself, Michelle, I'm in a season of like, I want to learn, I want to grow. And if I want to watch something on Netflix, I'd rather have a conversation with my husband. I'd rather go, you know, just read a book or something. It's just not my season. So I think you've got to honor where you are as well. And if you need your Netflix and chill, go for it. But if it becomes a daily evening habit, maybe it's asking yourself the question of, could I swap one evening of Netflix and chill for maybe an evening of some growth and some learning? And that small decision will compound over time. And you'll look back in a year and go, wow, I'm so pleased I decided to swap that, because look at what I can do now. But it's so important to get very intentional with your time and your energy as well. I thought this is the other thing that people don't realize. We have a finite amount of energy. And that's why, like, even in my recruitment company now, I am very selective even with like the jobs that I take on, the clients that I work with, because I don't want to work with time wasters. Because if I'm going to dedicate myself to a client, and you would know this having your own business, I'm going to give it everything of me. But it also takes away time from writing my book. It takes away time from spending time with my loved ones. It takes away time from working on my other businesses. So it better yield results for me. Otherwise, I'm not interested. So I think as a business owner, you have to be very strict. And if you're in corporates, very strict, and have those boundaries with people, because there's always things to do. But it's like, what's the most important thing to do, not the most urgent thing to do? That's what I've kind of really had to become very strict on. But I'd love to dive more in.
I was going to say, but that's where boundaries are so important. Like, yes, getting really clear, what is it that you're saying yes to and what are you saying no to? And that can be hard in corporate, because we are conditioned to always say yes. But is that yes going to serve me? Is that yes going to serve other people? If I say yes to this, what am I then saying no to? Because as you said, it's not just energy, it's also that capacity in a work sense. You just don't have the capacity in a day to sometimes do everything you want to do.
Correct. You're so spot on. I'm curious to sort of dive into your business now. Tell us more about that. Like, 11 years in business, what have you learned about yourself? Like, tell us more about what you do sort of day to day and how that journey's all come to be.
I love what I do. I often think, and I know this can sound like a cliche, but it really is a privilege. You are invited into people's world and you get to spend time with them. So I do a raft of different things. So everything I'm doing is really couched around that. So context of helping people navigate a complex changing world. And I do that through a number of different modalities. I do speaking events. I do a lot of facilitation with, you know, teams, but also large team events in organizations. And then I do the executive coaching. And all of them bring me joy. But I would say it's the executive coaching where you see the difference. You know, I often say, you know, speaking event is great. You know, you walk off stage and it goes, wow, that was amazing. And so it feels really good. And you know that you've left a small little imprint. But it's the executive coaching where you really can see that you are genuinely making a difference to someone's life. And I remember the first time one of my clients said to me, wow, you've changed my life. And I was like, no there's no better feeling when you know that you've actually left someone in a better place. And so I think what I would say that I learned through my time running a business is that you are wearing multiple hats all the time. And don't start a business unless you're prepared to really dig in and do the work, because there's the development of, you know, the product and the services. And so there's all the idea generation and bringing that to life. Then there's the time when you're actually delivering with clients. But then there is the operational aspect of running a business. And, you know, I would say, one, I've always loved learning. So the idea generation and the constant learning has never been an issue for me. But I've also got a good business head. And I think that just comes from the environment that I grew up in. You know, as a business owner, you're making decisions around, do I do this? Do I do that? And I often see people chase what I call shiny new toy syndrome. And it's, oh, here's the latest CRM. Here's the latest tool. AI, perfect example. Someone sent me the other day, 20 new AI tools I could use. I did almost have heart palpitations because I thought, so then what I did was I actually put all of those through ChatGPT and said, tell me what these all do. And given you that you know what type of business I run, would any of these be of use to me? And it did give me some good examples of which ones I could use. And there are a few where, oh, actually, that might be useful for some of my clients. But you do have to go, just because it's new doesn't mean that I have to go down that path. And CRMs are a perfect example, because changing a CRM system is, you know, a nightmare in of itself. And there's always going to be something out there that's slightly better. So you're always making those constant choices about what to do and when. Going back to a comment that you made before, though, around values and purpose, I'm very centered around sort of my life purpose and my values, and where, not just where I'm going, but where Craig and I are going as a couple. Because the running of the business, yes, he, you know, works in corporate. He has a different, you know, doesn't work in this business, but we are on the same track and aligned in terms of where we want to go together. And that's really important. So every year, and we've done this since we've been married, and we've been married now for 21 years coming to December.
Congratulations.
Thank you. We don't work our wedding day. So our wedding anniversary is a day that we spend together. And we talk about who we are as individuals, but also as a couple, and where we want to go. And we realign on goals so that we're very clear. So even with the running of the business, very clear about how the running of the business fits into the broader life picture of our life together, and what this contributes along with what Craig's work contributes. And that's important, because when you're a business owner, it does impact the relationship, the person that you're with, because it's all consuming. There is no, it's like there's not that there's no finish line, but there is always something to do. You could just keep going and going and going. So you have to set those boundaries, but you also have to know where you're heading.
Yeah, you're absolutely spot on. I noticed that you did Dare to Lead training with Brené Brown on your portfolio. Like I read her book, and obviously she talks heavily about values. And this has been sort of the anchor for me throughout my business. And I've made a lot of mistakes throughout this journey of swaying far too away from my values, which are health, growth, freedom. And I started the business to have more freedom. And in the beginning of running the recruitment business, I was having less freedom because I was working 7 days a week. And look, I do feel like there's a point in the beginning where you do need to put the reps in, you do need to put the time in, because that's what's going to get the business off the ground. And it takes an enormous amount of energy. But it's like anything, it's even like your career. If you're starting a brand new role in a brand new team, or if you're stepping up to leadership, you're entering the unknown. So you're going to have to double down. It's going to be a learning curve. You're going to have to sort of really sort of, I guess, go all in, but it's not going to be like that forever. And I feel like then you need to recenter yourself again, like you say, have that conversation with your spouse and be like, right, I've gone through this period of growth and transition. Now I need to make sure that I'm centered in what's important to me. And as long as I always feel connected to my values, I know I'm living a very successful life, which is so, so important. And like, I guess, so one of my final questions to you, Michelle, is that I would love to sort of, I guess, learn more about the types of like what you're seeing. Because I think anyone that's sort of in the coaching and leadership space right now, you've got a pulse on what are people actually struggling with at the moment? What do people need help with? Like, what are you seeing? We've gone through so much over the last 11 years. We've had a pandemic in there, a whole way of working changing. Now AI's come in. So much change that people are having to navigate. What are you sensing in the market right now from professionals like that are coming to you? What are they afraid of? What are they excited about? Any wisdom you can share with us?
Look, it's interesting because it's probably a mixture of things, but the overwhelming piece is really centered around the fastness of the change that's happening with AI. And then a concern about what does this actually mean? Where are we going with this? So there's a lot of uncertainty. I would say there probably isn't an organization that I'm working for that is not going through some form of change. And, you know, change in of itself obviously is not a bad thing, you know, because change leads to renewal, change can lead to growth, a whole raft of factors. But I also think that helping people navigate that and giving them, I guess, some tools so that they feel like they've got, not control's the wrong word, but choices as they're going through that process. Because we know as humans that when you don't feel like you've got a choice, when you feel like your back is against the wall, that doesn't create or doesn't promote for most people the most wise or adaptive response. And so organizations need to build adaptive cultures, adaptive readiness in their teams. And I also think individuals need to recognize this is it. Like, this is just part of how the world of work works. It's not going to get, like, change is not going to go away. Is the pace going to get greater? Potentially. Is the world of work going to get more complex? Potentially. So you have to, as an individual, take hold of that as well. So don't wait for your organization to develop you. Don't wait for your organization to sort this out for you. The organization will do whatever the organization needs to do to thrive, to grow. You need to make sure that you as the individual are doing what you need to do to grow and thrive through this. If that then means that there's a connection as you go through between what you want and what the organization wants as the change happens, brilliant. If it means that there's a disconnect, well, then you as the individual can make a choice as to, is this the right environment or do I need to go off and do something else? But you need to be the leader of your career. Don't wait for your organization to sort that out for you, because the more you put the choice in your hands, the better you're going to feel about what happens next.
Mm-hmm. I completely agree. And the more you stay in demand as well, you know, like, I feel like we want to future-proof our own careers. We want to make sure that we're learning the right tools and things to make sure that if all of a sudden the business shut down tomorrow, there was a big restructure, you can take your skills and what you've learned and go anywhere else. But you're so right. I think it is so important now more than ever to get in the own driver's seat of our own career and to not wait until the restructure happens or not wait until our employer says, hey, everyone, you all need to learn AI tomorrow or you're out. We need to be doing this now. We need to be working on ourselves all the time. And you've said some amazing things throughout this podcast that people can really sit with and think about. But it's finding those cracks, like you said, that we can really lean in and learn from. But Michelle, I could talk to you all day. You have just given so much wisdom. I've really, really enjoyed this conversation. Anything we haven't discussed today that you just want to leave the listener with that you feel like might empower them, encourage them, give them some dose of motivation just to get in the driver's seat of their own career and go for it?
People often see fear as a bad thing. I see fear as a good thing. And that reframe is important because if I'm not a little bit nervous, a little bit fearful when I'm doing something, for example, a presentation or, you know, running a session, it actually means I don't care. Oof. The nerves, that little bit of fear is actually, this matters to me. And so rather than see it as a bad thing, see it as a good thing.
I love that. I love that. Michelle, where can I send people to find out more about you and your services and everything that you do?
The best thing, just go to my website. So it's michellegibbings.com.
We'll make sure we put that in the show notes. And make sure you connect with Michelle on LinkedIn, visit her website. And Michelle, thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. If you've got this far, that honestly means the world to me and lets me know that you've got a lot of value from today's episode. So if I could just ask you to do one thing, pull out your phone and please leave a quick review. It honestly would mean the world to me. It will help this podcast grow and get our message out there to more people. So if you could do that for me, that would be amazing. And please reach out and just let me know what you want to hear more about, what you're interested in. It will just also help me make sure that I'm continuing to speak to topics that are relevant and also find guests that are real true experts in what you want to know more about. So have an amazing day. Thank you so much for doing that, and I can't wait to share the next episode with you.